Case number 23717, Howard Hawkins et al. Versus Mike DeWine et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Fitrakis, you may proceed for the appellant.
Yes, I'd like to ask this honorable court to allow me to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine, and you may proceed.
We're arguing that the district court erred by adjudicating issues of fact in order to grant defendants' appellees' motion to dismiss the plaintiff's appellant's amended verified complaint under Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12b-6. The district court erred also by ruling that Ohio statutes which require in-person signing and witnessing of nominating petitions or minor party formation petitions did not violate the 1st and 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, as applies under appellee's COVID-19 social distancing orders, of which there are four that we need to deal with. The district court erred by overruling plaintiff appellant's motion for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction against the defendant appellee's enforcement of Ohio statutes that requires candidates nominating petitions as independent candidates for president and minor party formation petitions. Now, the irony of all this, of course, is that we're doing this by Zoom because the court correctly, to ensure the safety of its the public, its employees, lawyers, and judges, perhaps lawyers should be last there, said that it would be safer. I concur wholly. So, on the other hand, the state of Ohio issued four orders which are vague on their surface, and as applied, make no sense as we look at this. So, partly what we're arguing is that how you apply these statutes in a pandemic should be logical and consistent with the spirit of the law or legislative intent. We're in a situation where the plaintiff appellants feel they're sort of in a tragic comedy where these broad orders are being issued about a pandemic where all mass gatherings, which as applied in reality is where you get signatures for candidates, right? Either that or going door to door with a list. So with four orders, two of them, and starting out with broad prohibitions against.
Catherine, let me ask you, I'm concerned a little bit about the fact that these laws actually have an exemption. Why is it vague to say that exempted or excluded from this order are gatherings for the purpose of the expression of First Amendment speech? Isn't your argument that collection of signatures is absolutely clearly First Amendment speech?
Well, the question the reasonable people see the right to petition. Often when people think of First Amendment speech, they think of freedom of the press or they think of, you know, freedom of assembly. But actually petitioning is a more complex issue. In fact, you can't petition federally, say, not to go to war because of the Republic Clause in the Constitution that says
What about the April 30 order that expressly says that it includes, among other things, petition and referendum circulators? Isn't that who your clients are?
It starts out as a general prohibition against people meeting, right? The last order they issued said people with 10 or more can't really gather together. So the reality of a pandemic is face-to-face, wet ink signatures are in fact a possible death sentence. And that what people are gonna hear is you can't have more than 10 people at your house and there's a pandemic and you should socially distance. They're not gonna wonder why the notion of a circulator is somehow exempt and may be associated with sickness and possible death.
Those are concerning. I don't dispute your concern. It's fair, but I'm also struggling with the Green Party, for example, could have started collecting party formation signatures, that at least your opposing counsel argues, as early as November of 2018. When it lost the ballot recognition status. Doesn't that failure to move forward earlier play a role in this case?
No, but they were in fact collecting signatures already. They had undergone back to the previous year and they were collecting signatures. Although I would concede that the nature is sometimes towards the end of this process. But, you know, they were pretty much shut out in March. So by the time the April 30th, if you've lost a month and a half of petition gathering, particularly from a party that is a minor party. But I would point out that in 2014, the Greens got 3.34% of the vote, well over 100,000 votes, and one of the highest totals in the post-war history of Ohio, indicating that there clearly were people willing to support the Green Party, as you'll see in the gubernatorial vote of 2014. And they were, in fact, collecting signatures, but they weren't due to June 30th. So in a lot of times, and you need mass gatherings. You wait to the spring. This is what we're arguing as applied in part, because you banned all mass gathering, the cannabis festivals, the environmental festivals, all the community festival in Columbus, all the places where tens of thousands of signatures are gathered at one time.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I was wondering how you distinguish this case from the Thompson case that's recently handed down by our court.
Well, let me. This argument really is distinguished by vagueness, not only on the face, but as applied, and is far more in common with the Shockey, the ruling of the court. I mean, you're saying that people in a pandemic are allowed to, you know, go out and get wet signatures. But it wasn't said in the first three orders. There was just kind of like, you know, socially distance yourself, no large gatherings. And on the other hand, it didn't really mention circulators to the fourth prohibition proclamation. And also you had...
Counselor, may I follow up with something on that? Wasn't Psaki different because Michigan did not have an exception for First Amendment protected speech? Isn't that correct?
But the exception doesn't appear, turn up to the fourth order, and it just refers to circulators. And there's a contradiction on the surface. I mean, why wasn't the state saying, you know, there's VeriSign, there's all sorts of legal matters that are being carried on because the judicial branch was wise enough to come up with ways to conduct business when the state of Ohio could have done the same thing. And it was contradictory. It's saying, hi, there can be no mass gatherings. It said it three times. Not only that, watch out, you need to socially distance yourself because you could get sick or possibly die. So it contradicts itself. It's vague. Why didn't they issue a separate order immediately to protect the First Amendment rights of minor parties? We're at the crux of our system, right? Madison wrote about that.
I interrupted to add a question on Psaki, but I think I interrupted Judge Seiler's question about why is this not exactly what Thompson is. So you've completed the answer to my interruption. I know you want to turn back to Judge Seiler's question now.
I appreciate that.
Just take just a moment, Mr. Petrakis. Your initial time has expired, so hopefully you can be brief.
Just no First Amendment carve-out. You said that in South Bay, which followed Thompson. I'm arguing that it's impossible in a pandemic to carve out a First Amendment exception for wet signatures. Not only that, it's dangerous, and the state should have known better.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Petrakis. Your initial time has expired. We'll hear next from Mr. Flowers.
Thank you, Chief Judge Cole, and may it please the court. I want to suggest two bases for affirming the district court, either one independently sufficient. First, the delay in bringing this case, and second, on the merits. I want to start with delay because one critical aspect of this case you'll see in the briefing and didn't come out in argument from my friend is that he's not yet suggested what relief would be available except just a free pass to the ballot. Now, that's the most extreme relief available in a ballot access case, because it completely denies the state the ability to enforce its ballot access laws. I would refer your honors to Fishman. That's the Supreme Court decision in which Justice Marshall denied a request to put candidates on the ballot when they challenged an even more onerous signature requirement in Connecticut, because he said, you could have brought this much earlier, and if you had, there may have been a way to accommodate the concerns without the drastic remedy of putting you straight on the ballot. Now, we're in a similar situation here because the Green Party and the presidential plaintiffs here waited until May 29th to sue, more than a month after the Thompson plaintiffs had sued. Then they took them 11 days to file an amended complaint. When they got a decision on June 24th, they waited 12 days to appeal. And in the interim, the June 30th deadline, in which was the first deadline at issue, had run. That virtually guaranteed that the only relief they could possibly get would just be a free pass onto the ballot. There's nothing else that can be done. I don't think at this point, they certainly have not suggested anything. And that latches argument independently requires affirming the district court. But I want to get to the merits, because my friend began his argument by saying that the district courts adjudicated factual issues at the motion dismiss stage. But he hasn't identified a factual issue that was adjudicated. Their sole basis for claiming that there was a severe burden here is the supposed vagueness of the First Amendment exemptions. And that argument doesn't fly for a few reasons. First, it's not a factual determination. The question whether a law is vague is a legal determination that doesn't depend upon the facts. Second, their argument just fails on the face of the orders. The initial orders all contained an exemption for First Amendment protected speech, and that applied to the very gatherings they're talking about, except so there were the First Amendment exemption applied from the very beginning of the stay-at-home orders. Beginning on April 30th, the state expressly permitted signature gathering. There is no plausible argument that a law expressly permitting signature gathering is vague. And I would note that as early as April, the state was taking the position in court that the First Amendment exemption permitted signature gathering. So if we had tried to prosecute someone for gathering that, we would have been judicially stopped from doing so. We said from the outset that the First Amendment interests were important and needed to be protected. The governor took that seriously. The health director took that seriously. And we never argued that that was barred. And on the face of the order, it is not barred. Judge Seiler and Judge Stranch, you asked about Thompson. I'd like to suggest that this case truly is decided by Thompson. Indeed, the burdens here are less severe than the ones that were deemed merely intermediate by Thompson. So in Thompson, you were dealing with initiative proponents, people who wanted to put an initiative on a ballot to make it law. They needed signatures equal in number to 10% of the people who voted for governor in 2018. If that was statewide, it needed to be 10% of the state population. For a municipal initiative, 10% of the municipal population. Yet even that, they said, was an intermediate burden. The signature requirements here are far less. The Green Party needed 1% of those who voted in the 2018 gubernatorial race, and they could have started in November 2018. And the independent parties had a year to gather just 5,000 signatures. Now, since this was decided at the 12B6 stage, obviously, we're not dealing with facts here, but if your honors were a bit concerned about that and wanted some assurance, we can look around and see plenty of First Amendment activity that's been going on even during the pandemic. We, of course, had major protests following the tragic death of George Floyd, where people were gathering signatures. And in fact, there was a massive movement to recall the Columbus mayor that, while it didn't qualify, got far more than 5,000 signatures in a very short period of time. We've had municipal initiatives that have been submitted to county clerks. If you look at the case Miller v. Thurston from the Eighth Circuit, at least the oral argument in that case, there was discussion about drive-through signature drives that they were running to safely gather signatures during the pandemic. So there were options for doing this. And that also brings me to the point that not only would the court contradict Thompson by holding that the burden here is severe, which is the only basis they give for ruling in their favor, it would create a circuit split. There are published opinions from the Seventh Circuit in Morgan v. White, the Eighth Circuit in Miller v. Thurston, and even the unpublished decisions from the Third Circuit in the case we submitted, the Libertarian Party case, and then the Reclaim Idaho case from the Supreme Court is in a similar vein. All of these recognize that as long as the state does not stop you from gathering signatures, while no doubt the pandemic makes it harder, it makes every aspect of life harder, from grocery shopping to anything else, as long as they don't prevent you from exercising those rights, they've not imposed a severe burden. And the Green Party here argue, their sole argument is that there's severe burden. If there's not a severe burden, they must concede.
Well, here's a question. Are those cases distinguishable because the circulator plaintiffs here allege that they fall within the high-risk categories subject to life-threatening complications from COVID-19? I don't believe in Thompson there was that kind of allegation. Does that not make a distinction?
I don't think that was alleged in Thompson, but it doesn't make a distinction. And the reason why is it's not a state-imposed burden. The state-imposed burden is to gather the signature. And the question is whether making people gather signatures is a severe burden. An individual can't come and point to their particular circumstances that make a, outside of state law, that makes something burdensome. Let me give you an analogy. If the Green Party had hired a signature collection company, and the company just breached its contract and stopped collecting signatures, or perhaps an independent candidate for president broke his leg and wasn't able to, severely and was in the hospital and couldn't go gather signatures, he would have a hard time getting enough signatures to qualify. But that would not be a state-imposed burden that would matter for the Anderson-Burdick analysis. And the same is true here. There are no allegations that they made any efforts to continue collecting signatures after the pandemic hit. And indeed, the only basis they give this court for finding a severe burden is the supposed vagueness of the stay-at-home order. So if your honors don't think those are vague, this case is over. There's not much more to do. Finally, I want to thank your honors for hearing oral argument. I know obviously this is a compressed case. We understand the urgency too, and understand the Green Party's urgency. We do ask, if there is an adverse ruling, to not issue the mandate immediately, just so that we will get an en banc petition on file if we need to within 24 hours, so we can get to the Supreme Court within a week. After that, that way ensuring that everyone's rights are well respected and protected. But if there are no further questions, we ask you to affirm for one of two independent bases. First, as a matter of law, the suit's barred by laches. Second, they failed to allege any facts, which, if assumed true, give rise to a plausible claim for relief.
I just had one quick question. Does the different burden of proof here make a difference that this grant of a motion to dismiss or a stay, a grant of a preliminary injunction. Does that, do you not see a distinction in those two burdens?
No, in the there are different burdens, but the reason that they're not material here is because we have to ask the question, if we assume every fact that they allege to be true, have they imposed a severe burden? And when we look at Thompson and the other cases for what they define a severe burden to be and what plaintiffs concede it is, which is exclusion or virtual exclusion from the ballot, they have not alleged any facts as opposed to legal conclusions that permit the inference that they were excluded from the ballot. And indeed, as I said, if the Thompson petitioners weren't, with a much higher signature requirement and much less time to gather them, then there's no argument that the Green Party was. Chief Judge Cole, I hope I didn't cut you off.
Oh, no, you did not at all. I had a very, very quick question. I know this case is on a very fast track, I understand. We've got an August 5 deadline, so to speak. I just had a really very general question.
Sure.
And maybe the time constraints would be a factor here, but the state proffers what it says are legitimate interests. Mm-hmm. In terms of the restrictions. How do we know that these interests are legitimate without having some sort of discovery? Should the state have to provide some sort of evidentiary basis for the legitimacy of the interest that it is articulating?
No, because the state interests here are established as legitimate as a matter of law. So for example, this court in Joel Levette recognized that ballot access laws like this that require some modicum of support serve a very important interest in limiting clutter. The Supreme Court said the same thing. So those interests are compelling as a matter of law. And I don't think anyone's disputing that our ballot access laws further those, which is why no one says that these would be invalid in non-pandemic times. The only question, the sole basis for their claim is that they've been severely burdened by the supposed vagueness of the exemption. So again, if the court rejects the vagueness argument, I don't think there's anything left of their case. They certainly have not identified any facts as opposed to legal conclusions that permit the inference of a severe burden.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Flowers.
Mr.
Fetrakis, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal. And I would like to address the vagueness issue. Let's say for the purpose of argument this afternoon, the court did not accept your vagueness argument. Is there any basis for us to distinguish Thompson at that point?
Well, Thompson didn't raise the issue of vagueness. And vagueness was in fact raised in ours, which is an issue of both law and fact. And the key issue, if a minor party, which doesn't have a lot of money, say, for example, it doesn't own the state house and can't have $60 million in bribe money from, say, a nuclear power company in that situation. They're reliant upon volunteers. They had already begun. And again, the lawsuit came before June 30th. Opposing counsel is referring to after June 30th for the appeal. So they did move forward. They went out, they tried. They deserved to be heard by a court. What was their experience in a pandemic, which is associated with sickness and death, which is unprecedented? And the state of Ohio has, in fact, there are remedies. In 2008, I know there was a remedy because I tried it before Judge Frost, that the parties were put on the ballot. In fact, four parties, the Libertarian Party, the Constitutional Law Party, the Green Party, and the Socialist Party, because it was such a burden that had been designed as the minor party law in Ohio, it was struck down by the federal court systems. So yes, there are in fact remedies, and vagueness was not raised in Thompson. I mean, if the mass public, also the promulgation, which is the applied aspect of the vagueness. Why wasn't there a separate promulgation? Why wasn't it made public that these people should go forward. I would argue that it would have been an incredibly bad medical decision to put high-risk people in a situation of getting a face-to-face wedding signature when the technology exists to do things easier. What about the latches on the state? They issued two orders in March. They issued three of them in March and another one in April. At what point weren't they thinking about our political process, factions, ideas, the marketplace of ideas that are fundamental to our political system? They clearly were not prepared for this either, if they're arguing we weren't. I mean, how many pandemics are there? One every 100 years, one every, we go back to medieval times. So the key difference between this and Thompson is vagueness.
Okay, anything further? Your time is just...
I would argue, though, that vagueness is the issue of fact and law, and my clients deserve to be heard.
Okay. Apparently, there are no further questions. We very much appreciate your arguments this afternoon and for your willingness to participate in this argument by way of video. We've been doing this now for several months, as we all know, because of the situation we have with COVID-19. We would much prefer to do the arguments in person, but we're just not at that point as of yet. So with that, the case will be submitted. We recognize again that number one, Mr. Fratrankis, you have filed a motion for expedited relief. We understand that this matter is on an expedited track and would hope to have a decision for the parties truly as soon as possible. So again, thank you both for your arguments, and the case will be taken under submission. And Ms. Nethero, you may adjourn court for the afternoon.
This honorable court is now adjourned.